Welcome, everybody. Welcome to another edition of our Tax Town Hall, top of the hour. So we're going to jump right in. We start with our prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Well, I don't have to remind everybody, we need God's blessings. So let's have a relationship and always try to make that relationship closer and closer. And ask frequently and just let's do our best to bring back the results of all that hard work that Americans have done over the last 200 and something years. All right, I'm going to admit a couple more out of the lobby into our show. So first, we're going to have Larry do a little follow-up on our topic from last week. And then Sean's got a little presentation about the Fifth Amendment and summonses and our favorite former IRS person, Lois Lerner. So Larry, go right ahead.
Well, the reason I just want to bring it up again, I have found over the years, my experience with dealing with people and trying to educate them about legal topics, you know, it is often very productive to kind of repeat things. And last week I was talking about principles of equal protection, you know, having over-inclusive classifications and under-inclusive classifications. And, you know, with these types of this knowledge about legal issues, you know, then when you have the opportunity to look at current events, then you can see how issues can apply to current events. You know, right now we've got this real heated battle. Congress is coming back into, you know, Washington, D.C. now after their August summer recess, and they're beginning to take up this issue of gun control. And if you notice what the various proposals are doing, you know, I think that they're taking into consideration, some of the proposals do take into consideration equal protection principles, others do not. And the reason I bring this up is, you know, this issue is going to be important for the Second Amendment issue. This issue is important for, you know, national health care. You know, there's more and more proposals coming out from the Democrats. They're going to be having their debate tomorrow night, and they're probably going to be talking about national health care. And then, oh, we got to take over the whole shit system, you know, for everybody. Well, the problem with the left-wing approaches to national health care, the problems with the solutions offered by the left-wing regarding gun control, is that all of their proposals are over-inclusive classifications. They violate equal protection because they attempt to bring in purely innocent people into the solution. For example, you know, there's numbers bandied about in reference to national health care. There's what, 120 or 130 million people that have their own health insurance. You know, if they're the employer, or, you know, they have it on their own. You know, but we have people like Bernie and AOC and, you know, some of those others, Kamala Harris and Pocahontas. You know, they want to, everybody's going to have it all taken away. You know, we're not the problem. If you got insurance, the people with insurance are not a part of the problem. They're not causing the problem. But they're using the problem to take over the whole medical system. A problem created by a minority of Americans is being used as an excuse to take over the whole medical system. And that then brings up this problem. Our response should be, you know, at a minimum, should make these arguments about, you know, that's an over-inclusive classification. We're not a part of the problem. The problem is caused by a minority. Have your solution apply to the minority. Now, the same thing applies to the gun laws, you know, the gun battle. You know, we've had, you know, two situations in Texas, one in Ohio. You know, all of that's happened here in the last six weeks. You know, while Congress was on recess, those events happened, and that then becomes the impetus for this talk about, oh, we got to have new gun control legislation. But then, you know, you hear Beto O'Rourke, I'm going to take all your guns away. And the response, you know, the response from good gun owners is, I'm not a part of the problem. Well, when you say I'm not a part of the problem, put that into a legal context. trying to come along and solve the problem about whatever we have in reference to these mass shootings in America, to say that the rights of law-abiding Americans must be encompassed within a solution to that problem, then that too is an over-inclusive classification. So I just want to remind our listeners, keep pounding it in their head, you know, that we have two big hot topics here in America. And the left wants to come along and use those problems to affect the rights of a lot of Americans, including the people that are not causing the problem. That is an equal protection problem. So if you get the opportunity, you know, try to comprehend, you know, this argument. And when you have meetings with others online, talking in conversation, some of your friends, you know, if they come up and, you know, bring these arguments up, try to educate them about, you know, our view of the law, you know, at a minimum in reference to national health care, for them to use the excuse that some people without insurance is the reason why the whole medical system has to be taken over. And of course, you know, I heard here recently, there was this guy that had a serious disease up in Canada. He was 41 years old. He had to commit suicide. They wanted to take over the whole medical system in this gamble. And doing so violates equal protection. For them to come along and in reference to the to use the these isolated gun incidences, these mass shootings, to use that as the reason to take away everybody's guns, that's an over-inclusive classification. I want to pound it in people's head. That's all I have to say, Joe.
Okay. Well, thank you, Larry. I consider myself pounded in. Listeners do too, and I appreciate it. Necessary. All right, Sean, why don't you hit us with some Fifth Amendment and summons information?
I will, but before I do, I've got a comment on what Larry said, the realistic part of it, because law, Larry has expressed quite adequately. They're trying to come and get your health insurance because other people don't have health insurance. Think about that. Just think about that for a minute. And by the way, the people that, if you follow Beto or whoever he calls himself, or Rourke, he's going to confiscate your gun or guns. You know what's odd about that, I find, is that he's going to send men with guns to take your guns. Think about that. Think about that real hard. Anyway, getting on to tonight's subject, we're going to be talking about two things very important. One will be the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution, which I think a lot of people are familiar with. If you've ever watched Dragnet or any other cop show, the Fifth Amendment's a really easy amendment. There's a whole lot of words in it, but they have reduced it down to you have the right not to testify against yourself in a criminal proceeding. Actually, that's not what the Fifth Amendment says. We'll get into that a bit. But we're also going to tie that into our really fun subject of the night, and that's the Internal Revenue Service. The Internal Revenue Service has a fantastic enforcement procedure. It's called an IRS summons. Now, an IRS summons is not a court-issued document. There's no judicial authority behind it, none whatsoever. The IRS simply has a statutory authority to issue an IRS summons to you to come in and give testimony. Actually, the way it works, the language goes like this: that you are hereby summoned and required to appear before whoever the guy is you're going to appear before, an officer of the Internal Revenue Service, to give testimony and bring with you and to produce for examination the following books, records, papers, in other words, the documents they want you to bring. And they represent this in a very general sense. But nevertheless, let's get back to the Fifth Amendment. Fifth Amendment, I'm going to condense it really quickly for purposes of this presentation. It says, no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. It doesn't stop there. Nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, at first glance, it appears that this Fifth Amendment only applies to criminal proceedings. That's not true. Supreme Court has ruled in several cases. The Fifth Amendment applies to criminal, civil, and administrative proceedings. Anytime a government agent sits down and wants to talk to you, the Fifth Amendment protections come into play. Though it starts out with not required to be a witness against yourself in a criminal case, it also says nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Due processes of law comes in a big play here. But nevertheless, as I said, the Supreme Court has said that you are not required to talk to a government agent and give him testimony, regardless of whether you're in a criminal proceeding, a civil proceeding, or an administrative proceeding. An IRS summons is an administrative proceeding. Now, let me tell you about the fun things about administrative proceedings when it comes to an IRS summons that I have found over many, many years. I've talked to a lot of people that have been hit with an administrative summons. And their first inclination is, well, it only comes from the IRS. I don't have to go. They're absolutely right. They don't. Approximately 95% of the people that decide not to go to an IRS administrative summons that I have met, and they do nothing else other than say, I'm not required to go to jail. Here's the thing. Nobody in this country should ever go to jail over an IRS administrative summons. Complying with one, it's inconvenient. Do you have some rights when you comply with them? Yes, you do. Can you change times and dates? Yes, you can. Can you go through several administrative and court proceedings to protect your rights? Yes, you can. But my question is to all of that is, why put yourself through all of that if you can simply comply with the administrative summons, although inconvenient, go in, state your case, the IRS doesn't like it, they take it up with counsel, counsel looks at it, everybody examines it, maybe several letters are exchanged. But one thing that happens through an IRS administrative summons, if you comply with it, if you go in, if you talk to the IRS, you won't go to jail. You may go to court once in a while. You may be involved in some letter writing back and forth, which we'll talk about during this webinar. But nobody should ever go to jail over an IRS summons. Larry, would you agree with that? I'll take that as a yes.
Larry muted himself.
Now, before we get on with the Fifth Amendment and any more on the administrative IRS summons, I want to talk about a particularly person that's near and dear to my heart, Lois Lerner. You might have heard her during the Obama administration. She was called in to testify before Congress as to why the IRS, directed by her, were preventing certain organizations from getting certain tax exemption status because of the fact that they called themselves by certain names. She didn't like that. I don't blame her because she really had no good cause to do it. But nevertheless, she came in before Congress. She was subpoenaed. She was summoned to come in before Congress. And she was told, you're going to come in, you're going to give testimony in regard to why you have not given tax exempt status to certain people and agents or organizations that have applied for tax exempt status. She didn't like that program. I don't blame her. But nevertheless, her appearance was required and she came in. Lois Lerner sat down and she gave a statement to Congress. And she explained to Congress that she had done nothing wrong, that she did everything within the ambit of the law, that she was not guilty of doing anything. Well, she didn't really actually say she was not guilty. She said she proclaimed her innocence of not being involved in anything that was untowards, and that she complied faithfully with law and her oath of office. And then she went on to say, based upon my statement of innocence, I'm claiming the Fifth Amendment. Now, I'll tell you what. I watched this on TV, and after I picked myself up the floor, up off the floor, and shook myself off, I thought Congress is going to eat this woman alive. But they didn't. Everybody sat there and they looked at her and said, "Wow, she just took the Fifth Amendment to these entire proceedings." And for some reason, with a congressional hall filled with attorneys and congressmen from both sides, it never occurred to somebody that she just gave testimony. And after giving testimony, she said, "Now I claim my Fifth Amendment. I'm not going to talk about this anymore." It doesn't work like that, I guess, unless you're Lois Lerner. There was a legal analysis in a letter that was filed by Congress trying to decide after Lois Lerner's non-testimony and claim of the Fifth Amendment, after she testified she was innocent of doing anything wrong, where Congress and the attorneys for Lois got together and decided, well, gee, she validly claimed her Fifth Amendment by saying, after she testified that she was innocent of everything, that she wasn't going to testify to anything. As you're going to find out, the Fifth Amendment doesn't work like that. However, in this this document, this letter describing Lois's testimony, on page 3 of it, if you have it up, Joe, if you don't, that's fine. I'll read it anyway. Here's what part of the legal analysis said on page 3, the second to last paragraph. It says, "Both Ms. Lerner's counsel and some members of the committee have argued that Ms. Lerner cannot be prosecuted under section 192 because the committee did not follow procedures designed to ensure that a witness is clearly apprised that her testimony is required." Wait a minute, let me correct that. She was summoned or subpoenaed to Congress. Her testimony was clearly required. But they went on to say that specifically they have argued that when a witness asserts claim of privilege, the questioning committee should, with respect to each question — they never did ask any, by the way — specifically overrule the claim, warn the witness that she will be held in contempt if she continues to refuse to answer, and then give the witness another opportunity to answer. Basically, I guess what they were saying was that, gee, after she claimed her Fifth Amendment, nobody asked her a damn question. Yeah, I don't recall for sure, but that might have been the case. But according to this report, nobody decided to ask her a question. Nevertheless, what she had just done was taken a blanket Fifth Amendment claim saying that, listen, I've testified, now I'm not going to talk about this anymore. Try that sometime when you go to court. Sit down and tell the judge everything you want to tell him now. And when you get done, tell him, oh, by the way, I take the Fifth Amendment to anybody that's going to ask me a question. It's not going to work well for you. Going on to this particular document on page 4, here's what the Congress and the attorneys also found. Remember, I guess you have to be working for the government for this to apply to you, as you will find out. In finding that Ms. Lerner waived her Fifth Amendment privilege, the committee focused on her assertions that she had done nothing wrong. Well, that's called testimony, folks. Had broken no laws — that's testimony — had violated no IRS rules, and had provided no false information to Congress, citing the Supreme Court's decision in Brown and Mitchell, where the committee found that these 4 specific denials amounted to voluntary testimony. But they respectfully disagreed with this, and they went on to say, where witnesses do not offer substantive testimony — in other words, I guess when Lois Lerner got up and said, "I didn't do anything wrong. I complied with the IRS and rules and regulations. I'm innocent of any wrongdoing. I did nothing wrong. I did everything I was supposed to do." There was nothing substantive about that, or substantive, however you want to pronounce the word. So they go on to say, where witnesses do not offer substantive testimony, however, and merely make general denials or summary assertions, federal courts have been unwilling to infer a waiver of the Fifth Amendment privilege. And they go on to cite to an Eighth Circuit court case and a Fifth Circuit court case, saying that, well, you know, that's kind of the way it is. Except, you know what, the Supreme Court has disagreed with that. So have many other circuits. You get up, you testify as to your innocence, the Fifth Amendment comes into play right away. You talk about it at all, you don't even have to be asked a question. You start testifying, the game is over. The Fifth Amendment doesn't come into play anymore until people start asking you specific questions. In other words, you can't testify and then say, oh, by the way, I take the Fifth. Now think about that. If you're going to take the Fifth, you get up and say, I'm not going to testify. You don't get up and testify and then take the Fifth. It doesn't work like that unless you're Lois Lerner, I guess. Anyway, going on to page five, it goes on. In her opening statement before the committee, Ms. Lerner offered no account or explanation of what occurred and revealed no facts about the matters under the committee's review. Instead, she made general, that's called blanket, general assertions lacking substantive content. She did not purport to explain why she believed she was innocent or why any information she had previously provided was not false. This matter, therefore, appears materially indistinguishable from other cases in which defendants were held not to have waived their Fifth Amendment. Well, I bring this up to show you there is a completely different standard of what's going on here. When Congress sat here and they actually bought this, and they actually bought what her attorneys were saying, that she never waived her Fifth Amendment, that was the biggest hoax that it was ever perpetrated on Congress. Or was it a hoax at all? Was it just Congress protecting their own? Was it the deep state protecting the deep state? I'm not going to answer that question, but after we get done discussing this, you may reach your own conclusions. Now let's talk about how this all fits in with an Internal Revenue Service summons. You get an Internal Revenue Service summons, you get it for two reasons. One is to either determine whether or not there's enough information to assess a tax against you, or whether or not there's enough information to collect a tax against you. There are two different summons. One of them is called a collection summons, the other one's called an assessment summons or a liability summons. One is trying to determine whether or not there is a liability which should be assessed against you, which means you have to provide information so the government can make this determination. The other summons is a collection summons, wherein the government has already decided there's liability against you, but they're going to try to collect the tax. The government has tried several times to distinguish between a collection summons and a liability summons. That is there's no difference. They're trying to distinguish something where there's no difference. Both of them ask for information. Both of them ask pretty much for the same information. Both of them will lead to you to giving testimony or providing documents that can and will eventually be used against you in a court of law, possibly in a criminal proceedings. Let me read to you what an IRS summons says, just briefly, part of it. This is important. When you get one, you'll read the top of it and it'll tell you who they're talking about, what kind of business they're talking about, who you're going to appear before, and who they want to come before them. And it goes on to say, you are hereby summoned and required to appear before a great IRS agent, an officer of the Internal Revenue Service, to give testimony and to bring with you and produce for examination the following books, records, papers, and other data related to the tax liability or the collection of the tax liability. In other words, there's no distinguishing between a collection summons and a tax liability summons. They're the same things. For in the purpose of inquiring into any offense connected with the administration or enforcement of the internal revenue laws. Any offense, ladies and gentlemen, means any administrative offense, any civil offense, any criminal offense. It doesn't distinguish. What they tell you is that we just want you to tell us everything we want to know, and then we're going to decide which internal revenue laws apply to you. Now, there was for a long time, and this may still be going on out there, that there's this idea, well, it's an administrative summons. You don't have to go to this administrative summons. That's correct. You don't. The IRS cannot compel you to go to the IRS summons hearing. Can't do it. Never will be able to do it until they change law. But here's what the IRS can do it. They can refer it to district counsel, who will refer it onto the Department of Justice. And then here's what they're going to do. They're going to issue a motion to compel your appearance at the IRS summons. In other words, if you don't come in and voluntarily comply with the administrative summons, the IRS can sue out a case against you in federal court, and all of a sudden you're going to be in court. And you're going to have to explain to a judge why you didn't go to the administrative summons. My question is this: why would you do that? Why would you take something as simple as an administrative proceedings and push it into a court when you could avoid it simply by going to the IRS summons hearing? There's nothing really overwhelming about an Internal Revenue Service summons if you know how to handle it. The trick is you have to know how to handle it. Now, I'm going to caution everybody that's watching this right now. We're going to be giving you a real condensed version of this, how you handle an IRS summons and how the Fifth Amendment applies, because there's very, very deep intricacies involved with the Fifth Amendment when it comes to an IRS summons. But here's the bottom line. When the IRS says, come on in, we want to talk to you in regard to your tax liability or how we're going to collect it, here's your administrative summons, let me recommend something I don't very often recommend. Go to the summons. It will save you a lot of money, a lot of heartaches, and probably a lot of court appearances if you go. If you don't go, I have seen more times than not people go to jail simply because they didn't comply with the IRS administrative summons and then didn't know what to do about it once the government sued out a petition to enforce it. Larry, have you ever seen that?
No.
I've seen it over and over again. The government will petition for enforcement of that IRS summons. And when they do, they go into court and they explain that you were summoned by the Internal Revenue Service under administrative summons. You failed to appear, and the law required you to appear. You gave no reason to appear other than, well, maybe they didn't have jurisdiction. That's going to be shot down right away in the court. Or you're going to give some other argument that, well, you know, I don't have tax liability, I'm not required to file and pay. Whatever reason you give in that respect, the court's not going to be interested. The court's going to be interested in one thing and one thing only. The IRS issued you an administrative summons. They're coming to this court asking for an order compelling you to attend the IRS summons. You have given us no reason under the law why you shouldn't go come in to this summons, because if you don't, we're going to hold you in contempt. The question is, would you rather go through that or rather go into the IRS summons and say, you know what, I've come here because you've said you want me to testify. Wow. And you want me to produce documents to show that I have some kind of a tax liability or that you should be able to collect money from me. And at the same time, you're accusing me that I've either filed a false return or I haven't filed any return at all. So you're accusing me of a crime coming out of the gate.